We want to be sure that we are fully capable of assisting any mariners who may be in distress off the north coast of Alaska.
The Coast Guard establishes a presence in Barrow. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Monday, July 16th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, the Anchorage Assembly deals with another election headache, 141 uncounted ballots.
Whatever we have to do to make sure that all 141 of those are accounted for, that's what we're going to do.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Grant Station, your fast track to funding, helping identify appropriate grant makers for your organization's programs and projects. On the web at grantstation.com.
Alaska Housing Finance Corporation offers home choice seminars that provide tools for making informed decisions about purchasing and financing a home and loans tailored for first-time home buyers. There's more information at ahfc.us. This message sponsored by Alaska Housing Finance Corporation.
The Coast Guard is launching a temporary base in Barrow beginning today in a response to the increased Arctic shipping. The Coast Guard calls it a forward operating location, and it will remain in place through October. It's the largest presence the Coast Guard has ever had in the Arctic, although it has been conducting Arctic outreach in Alaska since 2008. Petty Officer Kip Wadlow is a spokesman for the Coast Guard.
With the decrease in the Arctic ice, we've seen an increase in vessel traffic coming up through the Bering Strait and operating off the north coast of Alaska. And because of this trend and because of our primary mission of protecting lives at sea, we want to be sure that we are fully capable of assisting any mariners who may be in distress off the north coast of Alaska during the summer ice-free month.
The Coast Guard is basing two Jayhawk helicopters in Barrow, a maintenance crew and a communications team, about 30 people in all. In addition, Wadlow says two Coast Guard buoy tenders and two cutters will be making trips up to the Arctic to patrol the waters of the Beaufort and Chukchi Seas. The Coast Guard says the temporary base is not a response to Shell's planned exploratory drilling in the Arctic Ocean this summer, but that operation is one of the reasons the North Slope Borough is welcoming the increased Coast Guard presence. Jacob Adams Sr. is the borough's chief administrative officer. He says the borough has been waiting for the Coast Guard to show up for a long time.
I mean, just Shell alone has well over a dozen ships going to be operating out there to support two drill rigs. So the Coast Guard's presence does a lot to ease the minds of the people on the North Slope.
Adams wants the Coast Guard to establish a permanent base in Barrow, even if it's a small one. The Coast Guard says that decision hasn't been made yet. The Coast Guard has documented a steady increase in vessel traffic in the Arctic over the last several years. More than 400 vessels went through the Bering Strait last year, and about 200 made it to the Arctic Ocean. Investigators are trying to piece together information about whether one of Shell's drill ships ran aground in Unalaska on Saturday. KUCB's Stephanie Joyce has the story.
Down on the beach Saturday afternoon, it's blowing at least 35 knots. Dozens of people are snapping photos of Shell's Noble Discoverer drill rig, which is sitting a stone's throw away from shore. Longshoreman David Howard says he had noticed something wrong with a 500-foot rig earlier in the afternoon.
I'm just like anybody else driving by. You see it get closer and closer, and you know that it's dragging anchor, and they probably ought to get a tug on it.
It may be a while before investigators are able to answer questions about how events unfolded and why the response wasn't quicker. But in the meantime, they're focusing on the technical question of whether the Noble Discoverer actually ran aground. The company says no, based on ROV footage of the hull and reports from the crew. The Coast Guard is still waiting for more information. Lieutenant Jim Fothergill says damage to the hull or propellers is the only sure sign that the ship hit the beach.
I know they were very close to the beach, but we haven't yet determined whether or not they ran aground.
Shell plans to send divers underneath the Discoverer in the next few days to get a closer look. The Coast Guard will check the divers' video footage to determine whether the ship actually made contact with the beach. Regardless of what that shows, convincing locals might be difficult. Many, like charter captain Christian LaFosse, are sure the ship hit shore.
If the captain would have asked them to put the gangway down, he could have walked to the post office.
Shell Vice President Pete Slaby characterized it as a, quote, near miss, but says the company is taking it very seriously.
I don't doubt for a minute that this came entirely too close for our comfort.
When asked specifically how the Discoverer drifted towards the beach while multiple Shell vessels, including the tugboat Lauren Foss, sat nearby, Slaby said it was too soon to say.
We will investigate, you know, the timeliness of the response for the Lauren Foss and others, but we're happy that we have planned and had that ship in harbor for such of an eventuality.
The Discoverer is slated to start drilling in the Chukchi Sea next month. Slaby says this doesn't change that plan.
We will go up to the Arctic fully prepared. We'll learn from this incident. And I think, you know, it is a kind of an industry where incidents happen, and you know, the best you can do is to learn from the incident and not repeat.
More specifically, Slaby says the Discoverer will use 8 anchors in the Arctic, as opposed to the single anchor it had on Saturday. For the time being, the Discoverer will remain anchored in Unalaska Bay, with Lauren Foss standing by in case of high winds. In Unalaska, I'm Stephanie Joyce.
Just when everyone thought the messiest chapter in recent Anchorage voting history was closed, municipal leaders confirm they have found more than 100 uncounted ballots left over from the flawed April 3rd municipal election. KSKA's Daisha Eaton reports from City Hall.
Officials say clerk's office staff discovered the uncounted ballots in a storage closet in the assembly conference room on the first floor of City Hall last Wednesday. And where could so many ballots disappear? A staff member who city officials didn't want to name showed me.
This is the door to the room inside of the assembly conference room.
And this is basically just a corner room about the size of a large walk-in closet, right?
Correct, with windows.
And where exactly were the ballots?
On the tables, in black bags.
Inside those bags, officials discovered 141 uncounted sample ballots from 3 precincts that were cast during the April 3rd election. They say all the election materials were stored in that room. Anchorage Assembly Chair Ernie Hall chose to hold off on informing the media about the find until Friday evening. He says to better assess the magnitude of the situation.
There's just been too many mistakes in this election, and I didn't want this to be handled in a manner that it became another mistake.
The ballots were discovered just as the municipality was getting out from under the shadow of one of the messiest elections in its history. Attorney Dan Hensley, a retired Alaska Superior Court judge, issued a report earlier this month laying the blame on bad management by then-clerk Barbara Grunstein and an inexperienced deputy clerk, Jacqueline Duke. He also faulted the Anchorage Assembly for a lack of oversight of the clerk's office. Before the report was filed, the clerk resigned and a deputy clerk was fired. Hall says the ballots were found during transfer to a more secure vault in the clerk's office.
We found them when we took them out of the vault downstairs where they were stored, and they were in sealed bags down there. All the bags were open, and those contents were transferred into the file boxes. And that's when they discovered sample ballots in those bags.
Sample ballots were used after election workers ran out of regular ballots. They were supposed to be turned in and counted separately. Hall says because of the find, he's reconvening the election commission.
It's 141 ballots. It's not going to change the outcome of any election. But the fact of the matter is, I'm going to tell you, I'm having enough trouble living with the fact that we had a messed up election. I'm not going to live with the fact that maybe somebody's vote didn't get counted that came out and made the effort to do it. So whatever we have to do to make sure that all 141 of those are accounted for, that's what we're going to do.
Next week, the Election Commission will reassemble to check each of the 141 ballots. Information about which precincts the ballots came from will be released in a report to follow. Because of the discovery of the additional ballots, the election will need to be recertified, Hall says, likely in early August. In Anchorage, I'm Daisha Eaton.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, the Kuskokwim fishermen who put their nets in the water illegally have their day in court.
The state can resolve all this by pardoning everyone for having fished for food, and I think that would be the right thing to do.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Providence Imaging Center, providing diagnostic mammogram results to patients within one working day, led by Drs. Denise Farley and Heather Tauschik. PROVimaging.com. And by Crowley, providing tanker escorts, fuel delivery, and energy support services to Alaskans for nearly 60 years. From Valdez to the North Slope, Crowley knows Alaska. CentraliAlaska.com.
Under a treaty with Russia, subsistence polar bear hunters in the Bering and Chukchi Seas will follow a quota for the first time. On Friday, the Alaska Nanook Commission and the U.S. Department of Fish and Wildlife were in Shishmaref to detail the new international quota. From KNOM in Nome, Matthew Smith reports.
The quota agreement brings together subsistence hunters in Alaska and Chukotka with the backing of both the Russian and the U.S. governments. After a phased implementation next year, the quota is expected to officially begin in 2014 and allow for 58 bears to be taken each year, 29 per country. Rhonda Sparks is the regional coordinator for the Alaska Nanook Commission.
The reason why there's a quota system is a native-driven initiative to ensure future generation use of both sides. We did hear other hunters comment and say that it is important for them to hunt and subsist and go back to one of their traditional used resources, and that's polar bear.
Nearly 200 people turned out for the meeting in Shishmaref last Friday. Polar bear hunters in attendance generally seem to accept the quota, but their questions focused more on the food shared by both subsistence users and polar bears, namely seals. Since last year, diseased seals suffering from an unknown illness have been found in the North Slope and the Bering Sea. Hunters at the meeting in Shishmaref expressed concern about what diseased seals might mean for polar bears. Stanley Talktoo, the local Shishmaref representative for the Nanook Commission, says the polar bear quota doesn't seem as important as the health of the seals.
I don't think it really affects Alaskan too much, but we like to work with the Chukotka side, Eskimo side, you know, but they have a different government, different way of doing things, but the polar bear eats the seals. Just like we depend on the seal. We got things to worry about to our beaded seal, losing their hair and their fur.
Warren Ningaluk is a polar bear hunter in Shishmaref. He said that with a healthy, if uncounted, population of polar bears in the Chukchi and Bering Sea, a quota doesn't seem necessary.
I don't think there should be any quotas. I don't think that's a good idea because of the number of polar bears that were estimated for the population in Alaska and the other countries are pretty healthy for the population. I think the population would start to go down if Russia is allowed to hunt again.
Alaska hunters take about 30 bears annually, close to the proposed quota, but hunting polar bear in Chukotka has been illegal since 1956. Fish and wildlife biologist Jim Wilder says that leads to an unsustainable illegal take that is impossible to manage. The new agreement will allow for a legal and manageable harvest in Chukotka.
Polar bear harvest in western Alaska is certainly within sustainable limits. But on the other hand, the best available information we have indicates that the level of killing of polar bears on the Russian side is likely not sustainable. And so, yeah, the agreement's very important for that because it recognizes the rights of Chukotka natives to harvest polar bears within a managed system.
The quota strives for a 2-to-1 male-female harvest ratio and can be adjusted as studies of the polar bear population are completed. In Alaska, skull and hide tagging requirements already in effect will remain in place, and the sale of polar bear parts will still be regulated by the Marine Mammal Protection Act. Any kind of commercial or sport hunting will remain illegal. The Alaska Nanook Commission serves 15 communities in western Alaska. Their meeting in Shishmaref was only the beginning of a consultation process in villages throughout the region. In Nome, I'm Matthew Smith.
About 24 Kuskokwim River subsistence fishermen will go to trial in the Bethel Courthouse after pleading not guilty to fishing with illegal gear. Federal and state wildlife managers closed the Kuskokwim to salmon fishing for an unprecedented 12 days this summer in order to protect the low Chinook salmon run. From member station KYUK in Bethel, Angela Denning Barnes reports.
84-year-old Alexei Nikolai of Oscarville set out his subsistence salmon net this summer just like he had done his whole life. Nikolai tried following the fishing restrictions, but he had his net in the water June 13th, when it shouldn't have been. Nikolai says when he realized his mistake, he went to take it out and was met by three law enforcement officers who seized his net. Nikolai doesn't speak English, and the officers didn't speak Yupik, so Nikolai's family members had to translate. Sergeant Ken Acton with the Alaska State Troopers says Nikolai was fishing 30 minutes after the closure began.
We'd seize the net and then we'd make a final determination later. We determined that we were going to give Mr. Alexei his net back because there is some issues with the language barrier.
Other fishermen who have been cited knew they were fishing illegally. 33 fishermen were sighted June 20th when some villages organized fishing protests. 10 fishermen were arraigned on June 26th at the Bethel Courthouse. Magistrate Bruce Ward.
In any event, each of you have been charged with using a drift net with greater than 4-inch mesh in violation of 5AAC-01.
The court provided no UBIC translation during the arraignment, but some fishers received help from family and friends who were present. The state gave the same offer to each fisherman. Assistant District Attorney Chris Carpinetti.
The charge would be reduced to a violation, and there would be a fine to pay, a $500 fine with $250 suspended. So that would be $250 to pay. You'd be on probation for 1 year, and the condition of your probation would be not to have any fish and game violations. Okay? And the nets that were seized would be returned to you.
Of the 10 fishers arraigned that day, only one pled guilty.
I was thinking about it in both ways. I'm going to lose in both ways.
48-year-old Norman Black of Nepakiak didn't come to his decision lightly.
I got only one net that's in possession right now. People I fish for are the elders who can't do nothing, and for my kids. So I was thinking, like, if I plead guilty right now, I'd have my net and have some fish for the winter for them.
For pleading guilty, Black got his net back the same day. At least a few dozen more fishermen were arraigned July 9th in Bethel for illegal fishing. The deal was the same. Some pled guilty and others didn't. All the fishermen pleading not guilty will now stand trial. Myra Nanning is the president of the Association of Village Council Presidents, representing 56 tribes in the YK Delta.
The state can resolve all this by pardoning everyone for having fished for food, and I think that would be the right thing to do.
AVCP organized free legal advice for the fishermen who were cited. In Bethel, I'm Angela Denning Barnes.
As the salmon make their way upstream and rivers bustle with eager anglers, the Alaska Department of Fish and Game wants to remind sport fishermen about the ban on footgear with felt soles. Anglers have used felt soles on their boots for years to provide better traction and stability on slippery rocks. KMXT's Brianna Gibbs has more.
Tyler Polam is a biologist for Fish and Game in Kodiak and said felt-bottom shoes aren't illegal, but rather not permitted in fresh water. This is to prevent the spread of invasive and potentially dangerous parasites.
They're not illegal in the state of Alaska as a whole, but starting January 1st this year, you're no longer allowed to sport fish with felt-soled waders. And this next January 1st, you will no longer be able to hunt with felt-soled waders. So there's no law saying you have to quit selling these, but you cannot sport fish this year with felt-soled waders.
Tammy Davis is the invasive species coordinator for a fishing game in Juneau and said the ban is an attempt to stop the spread of invasive species, a growing problem in Alaska's fresh waters.
Trout Unlimited took up the cause and submitted a proposal to the board that would make felt or absorbent waders not legal in fresh water for the entire state.
Davis said much of the research that links felt-soled boots to various invasive species has been done in southeast Alaska, where the law was first put into effect. Some of the most common freshwater invaders are New Zealand mud snails, Didymo, also known as rock snot, and the parasite that causes whirling disease, a neurological disorder that can cause skeletal deformities in salmon and trout, causing them to swim in circles. While the new law may be a pain for anglers, Davis said she hopes they will respect the fact that it will protect the fisheries. In Kodiak, I'm Brianna Gibbs.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Meridian Management, specializing in coordination and management of all phases of construction projects from vision to completion, working to ensure that your project is on time and on budget. More at meridianak.com. Do you own a business or manage employees? Do you reassure employees with children that you're committed to supporting them? Well, research shows that employees who feel supported at work when handling their parenting challenges are more loyal and more productive. When you let employees know they can attend a parent-teacher conference, stay at home with a sick child, or adjust their schedule to secure quality child care, you contribute to stronger families. This message sponsored by Best Beginnings, Alaska's Children's Trust, and Strengthening Families Alaska.
The family of missing Mount Marathon runner Michael Lemaitre of Anchorage is calling off its search after more than a week of continuously looking for him on the mountain. The Seward Fire Department has also suspended its search over the weekend because of depleting resources and poor weather conditions. The Seward Fire Chief says small search teams will resume when conditions improve. Lemaitre's son-in-law, Curtis Lynn, says the mountain is slick and becoming more dangerous. He says the family does not want volunteers to continue risking injury. The 66-year-old Lemaitre vanished during the annual 4th of July race in Seward. A woman was wounded by an Alaska State Trooper after an exchange of gunfire on the Sterling Highway near Anchor Point Sunday night. KBBI's Aaron Selbig has more.
Alaska State Trooper spokesperson Megan Peters says the shooting began Sunday evening on the Sterling Highway near Happy Valley, about 10 miles north of Anchor Point, after troopers received multiple calls from motorists concerning the erratic driving of a yellow SUV. At about 6:15 p.m., an Alaska wildlife trooper saw the SUV headed northbound on the highway and attempted to pull the driver over. When the vehicle stopped, the female driver suddenly pulled a gun and began shooting at the officer, who immediately returned fire. The driver then sped off, stopping again in the middle of the road at about mile 147. Troopers from the Anchor Point and Soldotna posts, along with Homer Police Department officers and members of the South Central Emergency Response Team, responded to the scene. Peter says that after about 30 minutes, the driver put her hands outside the vehicle and officers were able to apprehend her without further violence. Peter says the driver was discovered to have an apparent gunshot wound to her torso and was taken to South Peninsula Hospital in Homer for treatment before being transported to Anchorage to the Alaska Native Medical Center. Troopers are being tight-lipped on details of the incident. Peter says they have identified the suspect but have yet to release her name. As of Monday afternoon, she had not been arrested nor charged with a crime. The Sterling Highway was closed in both directions for several hours Sunday night because of the incident. Reporting from Homer, I'm Aaron Selbig.
It's been just over a week since the Haines commercial fishing fleet and community lost a longtime resident and fisherman. But already a unique effort to honor and memorialize him has taken hold in the community. Margaret Friednauer from KHNS reports.
At first glance, the Richard Boyce Inflatable Suspender Memorial Fund sounds a little lighthearted. But the goal behind the memorial effort is serious: to outfit the entire Haines commercial fishing fleet with a flotation device in the form of inflatable suspenders. Richard Boyce was presumed drowned last week when he tripped and fell overboard from his gillnet boat in the early morning hours of July 4th. The Coast Guard said Boyce was not wearing a flotation device when he went overboard. But really, it's difficult to find a commercial fisherman that regularly does wear any sort of PFD. Jerry Dugan is the executive director of the nonprofit Alaska Marine Safety Education Association in Sitka. He said while many safety procedures in commercial fishing have changed for the better over the years, the percentage of fishermen that perish in drownings from man overboards has not decreased. He said there are many reasons flotation gear has never caught on with commercial fishermen.
Wearing flotation is like one of the most important things that you can have for prevention of drowning for a man overboard. Absolutely. But, you know, a lot of it is just a culture of people don't wear it, or, you know, you wear them as a kid, but then part of the passage of manhood is like you don't have to wear it anymore. And it's really hard to change culture.
But Randa and Jim Szymanski, longtime friends of Boyce, came up with the idea of finding a PFD that fishermen would wear and raising the money to offset the cost. The Szymanskis searched on the internet and found the company Stormy Seas that makes a variety of inflatable clothing. Randa said the inflatable suspenders should be easier and more comfortable than the traditional types of PFDs that most fishermen shrug off.
The beauty of what we're trying to get here is it replaces the suspenders on the bibs. So when you put your bibs on, you've got your flotation. You don't have to think about anything extra. And that's the only way they're going to get worn.
The Szymanskis said it would take about 200 pairs of suspenders to outfit every skipper and deckhand in the Haines fleet. With wholesale pricing, that means the fund is aiming to raise $20,000. In less than a week, the fund has nearly met its goal with about $16,000. At Boyce's memorial service in Haines this week, the community gathered for live music, fresh salmon, and sharing memories, and another $2,600 was donated to the fund. The Szymanskys said they are almost ready to order the suspenders, but not before a custom addition is made to each pair, Randa said.
We're going to have each one embroidered with In Memory of Richard Boyce. When the guys are wearing them, they remember why they have them on.
For KHNS, this is Margaret Friednauer in Haines.
The late Senator Ted Stevens received a posthumous honor last week when he was inducted into the U.S. Olympic Hall of Fame. Stevens is credited with leading the congressional effort to pass the Olympic and Amateur Sports Act. It was later retitled to include his name.
If you're an Olympic athlete, Senator Stevens is an icon in many ways.
Nina Kemple is a former Alaskan Olympian who competed as a cross-country skier in four Winter Olympics. Kemple says other non-Olympic athletes have been inducted, but she says Stevens may be the first senator. She says inductees are voted on by Olympians and Paralympians, making it an athlete-driven honor. Growing up in Alaska, Kemple says she knew of Stevens as a state senator, but when she rose to Olympic competition status, she saw him differently.
When I made my first Olympic team and sort of my venue into the Olympic family, when you would say Senator Stevens, people would stop and go, whoa. And he really commands a lot of respect. And so it was a very different angle for me to view my, Senator Stevens as that. And I think today there's probably not a single Olympic athlete who doesn't know who Ted Stevens is.
Kemple says Stevens was the impetus behind developing the U.S. Olympic Committee. She says athletes would not have rights as they do today without his work. She says the act helped define amateurism and created the national governing bodies that support athletes, such as the U.S. ski, swim, and gymnastics teams. Stevens was also instrumental in passing Title IX, which gave women equal access to sports participation opportunities in the U.S. Kemple says Stevens was always a big supporter of athletes.
He saw the real value in protecting athletes, and he was one of the most proud senators when we would, after the Olympics, the whole Olympic team goes to the White House and you meet the president and your senators, and Senator Stevens was always the one that was sort of the most proud to be standing next to the Alaskan Olympians, and it was, you could always tell that he truly appreciated the efforts that the athletes have made, but also the sort of movement itself.
Kemple is currently a board member for the U.S. Olympic Committee. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Stephanie Joyson on Alaska, Dacia Eaton in Anchorage, Matthew Smith in Nome, Angela Denning Barnes in Bethel, Brianna Gibbs in Kodiak, Aaron Selbig in Homer, and Margaret Friednauer in Haines. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
BP, supporting public broadcasting in Alaska.
And by
First National Bank Alaska, helping Alaska's dreams grow since 1922. On the web at fnbalaska.com, an equal housing lender, member FDIC.
For thousands of years, the coastal residents of Arctic Alaska have depended on the polar bear for sustenance, utilitarian, and spiritual purposes. The Alaska Nanook Commission was formed to ensure that current and future Alaska Native subsistence hunters will be able to continue to harvest this important resource. The Alaska Nanook Commission, along with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, would like to hear from subsistence polar bear hunters. Learn more at alaskanannookcommission.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Nanook Commission.
You can find APRN headlines from around the state online at alaskapublic.org. There you'll discover local and worldwide news, upcoming events, and statewide community conversation. alaskapublic.org, connecting you to Alaska one story at a time.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.